And thank you, Kath, for leading us so well. Thanks for all those who've shared this morning. It's great to hear what God is doing in different parts of the world and what God is calling people to do and to go in his service. It's great to share together and to worship God together. You may know, if you were here last week, if you picked up one of these, that we are, over this summer period, looking at different prayers that people prayed in the Bible. Prayers in different contexts. Prayers when people were feeling different things. Prayers when they wanted to say different things to God. In the morning, we're looking at prayers that we find in the Old Testament, and in the evening, we're looking at prayers that we find in the New Testament. And this morning, it's probably no shock to know that we're going to look at the prayer that we found in the short story that Liz read to us a few moments ago. A prayer of Moses when he was reflecting on what God was calling him to do amongst the people of God. To put it in a bit of context, God had rescued this people, these hundreds of thousands of people, from slavery in Egypt. And he'd brought them out of there. He'd brought them across the Red Sea. And they needed something to eat. So he provided food for them called manna. Little white flakes that they had to go and collect. In Exodus chapter 16, it says that when the dew was gone, so dew came down onto the ground overnight. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. And they had to go and collect it, and they had to bake it. And they had to use that as their food. God had provided for them. He brought them to Mount Sinai, where he appeared to them and gave them the law. I am the Lord your God. This is how you should behave in relation to me. Then after a time there, he tells them it's time to move on. This wasn't their final destiny. This wasn't where he had brought them out to be. He was taking them to the promised land, the land he'd promised to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, to say, this is where you as my people will live. And so God had said to Moses, take the people on from Sinai into the promised land. And that's where we've got to in the story this morning. And there is a problem. And the problem is that the people are complaining. They are not happy. And they are not happy because they are always eating manna. Liz mentioned that earlier. That was the issue. They were getting bored. If we'd read a bit earlier in the chapter, we find they're referred to as, well, some of them are referred to as the rabble. Not sure we should find these sorts of words knocking around, but apparently they were rabble. The rabble within them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. Even though they've been slaves there, they look back with longing on what they've been able to eat. A few years ago, I went with a group of people to Thailand. And it was a trip that had been organized by the college I was studying in and the Baptist Missionary Society. And a group of us went out and we spent time in Thailand, working with some missionaries out there, touring around various places, visiting very remote villages and sharing with them the good news of Jesus. Andy, when he was talking earlier, mentioned about the amazing hospitality that he and those who go with him receive from the people in Rwanda. And we experienced the same thing. You go into these very poor villages where people have nothing, and they do so much to give you what they have. And they provided food for us in many, many different places. And it was great to share with them when we had some wonderful meals together. I struggled with the curried spiders. But apart from that, we had some good things. But one of my abiding memories is rice with everything. And I like rice. I like rice. But I remember coming back home and Joe was saying, well, what do you want to eat? And I said, anything that hasn't got rice in it. It was just, I'd had enough. And I also understand where these guys are at. Manna, manna, all the time. and they'd had enough. They were free for the first time in hundreds of years. They'd been in Egypt for over 400 years, not all the time, but most of the time as slaves. They were free. They were on a journey to somewhere wonderful, but still they complained. It's human nature. However better things get, we can always find something to be not happy about. And that's what was going on here. And it was affected everyone. Moses heard the people of every family wailing. It wasn't just that there were a few who were unhappy, but somehow it affected everybody. God wasn't pleased. God was exceedingly angry. The people were rejecting his provision. It might not have been exciting food, but it was all they needed to enable them to live. And the people were saying to God, look, it's not good enough. And the Lord, it says, became exceedingly angry. Moses was troubled. Maybe for a different reason. Maybe he wasn't stressed that they were not happy with what God was giving them, but he was thinking, well, actually, this makes my life a bit more difficult. While people were happy with manna, it was okay. Food was off the list of things I had to worry about. But now it's hard. And part of it, maybe Moses was thinking, well, if God hadn't given me this job, I wouldn't have to be coping with this at the moment. Moses was troubled. And so he does the right thing. He turns to God. And he speaks to God, and he asks the Lord, and effectively he comes up with five questions that we find in this passage. And in verse 11, he's basically saying, why have you made my life difficult? I was happy before. I knew what I was doing. I was looking after the sheep. And they would go off somewhere, and I would follow them, and I'd bring them to where they needed something to eat. And it was okay. I knew what I was doing. I'd done it for 40 years. And I was happy. I was married. But now I'm in the middle of all of this. Hundreds of thousands of people are complaining. And they're complaining at me. Why did you put me in this situation? That's his first question. Then he says, well, actually, did I do something wrong? What did I do wrong that you gave me this job? Are you punishing me for something? Seems to be Moses' question. Then he says, actually, they're not my people. Did I conceive all of these people? They're not my children. Imagine being responsible for a million children. It's a frightening thought, isn't it? My sister's got six. One of her daughters is soon to have four. And, you know, that's quite a lot. But Moses seemed to have this responsibility for what's described as 600,000 men, and there were women and children and a load of hangers-on. There was a lot of people. And Moses was saying, these are not my children. They're not my responsibility, but they seem to be. What's going on? Why did you give me this? Why did you tell me to lead them to the promised land? You knew it was going to be difficult. Why did you make me do it? And where can I get food? How am I going to solve this problem? So those are the questions that Moses asked God. I don't know how you'd characterize this. Is he being a bit petulant? Sulky? Is he blaming God? Yeah, I know you gave me this job, but I didn't know it was going to be like this. I wonder if those sorts of conversations go on sometimes between people like Boris Johnson and Theresa May. Yeah, I knew it was going to be hard, but these first few weeks have been horrendous. He was feeling the pressure. He didn't see any way forward. Why me? How often have we been there? Maybe not in the same situation as Moses, but in our contexts, we've just found life too hard. There's one week that sticks in my mind when I was working in the IT industry, when I looked at what was ahead of me. and I thought, there is no way that I'm going to be able to get through this week. I had to travel to three corners of the country on multiple occasions and have difficult meetings in all of these places. I didn't know how I was going to get through that. For the record, I did, so that's good. But sometimes I was put in situations I just had no clue how to deal with. Some of the time I worked as an IT consultant, and I went out and solved people's problems that they were having with technology. I remember going into a bank at about 10 o'clock at night, and everything was falling apart. And I looked at it and I thought, well, I think this is the solution to your problem. And I said, you do realize that if this doesn't work, the entire bank stops tomorrow. I thought, no pressure there then. And I thought, well, okay, this will fix it. And amazingly, it did. But I felt inadequate for the situation. So sometimes in a work context, we just think, what are we doing? It's also true, I think, when we are called to do things for God. In some of the churches I've been involved in previously, we've had to cope with major, major problems. There were times when I was reduced to tears as I was trying to think about how I lead this group of people to a place that is better than we were at the moment, at that time. Times when I was thinking, you know, I just don't know what I'm doing here. How can I move forward? Sometimes we are called by God to support people through really significant crises, moments in their lives, and we just don't know what to say. Maybe that's a good thing, because sometimes we're supposed to listen, but that's a different issue. And people have expectations of us. We have expectations of ourselves. And we think we are inadequate. And that's sort of where Moses was at. I can't cope. It's too hard. Why have you given me this job to do? But the good thing about Moses is that he took his questions to God. Because he knew that, that was the right thing to do. He knew that God was the one who put him in this situation. So it was right to have that conversation with God. And after he'd asked these questions, he follows it up with some statements. I can't do this on my own. I can't look after all these people on my own. It's too much for me. He realized he's reached his limits. He couldn't do it anymore. And sometimes it's when we come to that point that God is able to work through us and in us and bless people through our ministry. But Moses had really got to a low point. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. If this is how it's going to be, I don't want to carry on. I'm done. It's difficult not to feel for Moses as he goes through this situation. Jesus, recognizing that life can sometimes be hard, offers help and support to his people. In Matthew 11, he says these amazing words, "Come to me, all you are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Friends, do any of us need to hear those words of Jesus this morning? That like Moses, we are finding life is hard, we are under pressure, we don't know where to turn, we don't know how things are going to move forward. And Jesus says, "I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Moses did the right thing. He turned to God. He was open about how he was feeling. It was a cry for help, even though it might come across as a sulky moan. Important that we are able to do the same. To not try and hide things from God, because he actually does know about them anyway. But sometimes we can try and do that and say, well, I don't really think I ought to talk to God about this because it's not right. But the example of Moses, not to try and hide things from God, not to try and hide how we're feeling, but to be open and to say, this is where I'm at, and I don't know what to do. So what does God do after being on the receiving end of all of this? First, he doesn't criticize Moses. He doesn't say, look, stop it. You've got a job to do. Get on with it. Why are you making all this fuss? He doesn't criticize him for one moment, but he commits himself to act. And he's going to do two things. He's going to bring some people to help Moses, and he's going to provide some food. And in all of this, he doesn't remove the responsibility that is given to Moses. At the end of this, Moses is still responsible for leading the group of people. God doesn't say, well, look, if that's how you're feeling, I'm going to give this job to somebody else and you can just go back to your sheep. God has called Moses to this position. God is wanting Moses to carry on with this. But God is coming alongside Moses and saying, okay, I'm going to do some things to help. And one thing is he's going to provide and equip people to work with him. One of Moses' complaints is, I can't do this on my own. So God says, okay, we're going to give you a leadership team of 70 people to work with you. Bring them to me, and I will pour my spirit upon them. And together, you can lead these people. So he's going to reduce the burden. And the next thing is he's going to provide enough food for the people to eat for a month. Not just one day or 2 days or 5, 10, or 20 days, but for a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it. God was a bit angry with these people. They're saying, yeah, I'm going to do what you're asking, but at the end of the day, you're not going to like it. But at this moment, what God was saying to Moses is, I am going to solve this problem for you. He didn't respond to Moses' 5 questions point by point and say, yeah, the reason I did this was because that and so on. But he does say, look, I've heard and I'm going to work to solve the problem. And Moses hears this and says, yeah, but how? How on earth are you going to do this? There are, as it says, 600,000 men on foot. And you're going to give them enough to eat for a month? And God's answer is important for us to hear. It's in the form of a question. Is the Lord's arm too short? Often in the Bible, the power of God is referred to as the arm or the hand of the Lord, as though God is reaching out and acting and taking and doing things and making things happen. And what God is saying here is, do you think that my power is limited? Is there anything that I cannot do? This idea of the arm of the Lord is something that occurs time and time again. In Isaiah 50, God says, when I came, why was there no one? When I called, why was there no one to answer? Was my arm too short to deliver you? Once again, God's people were in captivity. They had turned away from him and he'd sent them into exile, and they were complaining, they were not happy. And God says, why didn't you just turn back to me for help? Because my power is unlimited and I could have brought you home. A few chapters later on, surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save, nor his ear too dull to hear, but your iniquities have separated you from your God, your sins have hidden his face from you, so that he will not hear. The arm of the Lord is not too short to save. God's power can do amazingly more than we can begin to ask or think. But sometimes, Isaiah tells us, our sin gets in the way. We're not prepared to ask. We're not prepared to seek forgiveness. And so God limits what he does in our lives. The Lord says, is the Lord's arm too short? And we may be facing many different situations, many challenges, many questions as to what God is asking of us, as to what is going on in our lives. And we may not know where to turn. This may be true today. It may be true in 6 months' time. It will be true at some stage in our lives. And this word from God is so important for us to hear, that his arm is not too short to save, to reach out, to bless, to lift up, to strengthen, to encourage, to deal with a situation. And so at the end of this prayer, at the end of this encounter with God, Moses had been brought through a time of, well, I just don't know what to do, and I don't know why I'm in this situation, and I don't know why you've done this to me, and why don't you just kill me? To a point where God was saying, I am going to give you what you need. I am going to surround you with the people that can work with you. I am going to provide the food that the people are complaining about. And I'm going to do it because my power is unlimited to work in the situation in which you find yourself in. Our context will be different. We may not need 70 people to come and support us and help in what we were doing. We may not need God to provide quail for the next month. I don't know what quail is like, but hey. But we will need God to come and bless and to speak and to save and to bring us into a new relationship with him. So when we find ourselves in that situation, let's do what Moses did. And let's be honest and open and bring our prayers to God and say, God, why are you doing this? But then let's be prepared to listen, to hear God's answer, and to hear what God is going to do. One of the phrases that we prayed as we shared the Lord's Prayer together was words that Jesus encourages us to pray. Give us today our daily bread. Daily food, such as the people wanted here. Strength for the day, such as Moses needed. Moses was prepared to engage in prayer over something he just did not know how to handle, and saw God acting in a powerful way. Are we prepared to do the same? Instead of complaining to others, instead of just withdrawing into ourselves, instead of giving up, whatever it is, are we prepared to come to God and expect to see God act in mighty power as he gives us our daily bread?